This is Rick Earle, and we have Misty Mott on the call today. We'll be teaching about educating by drawing out. She is our primary pyramid project and trainer, and has been working with us for years and years, and Lemmy, a very good quality trainer, and I've watched her in action and in training, and she does a wonderful job. She has really good counsel, so she'd be a great call. Thank you so much for being on the call with us. Are you there, Misty?
I am.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Rick.
You're welcome.
Looks like we still have some people joining in on, and I want to say good morning to everybody who's here so far. How's everybody doing?
It's been great.
Good. I hope that everybody is getting ready for their Christmas season and that things are going well with their families. I'm excited to be on this week because preparing for this call is really helping me prepare for second semester in my class, taking a good look at my kids and what the needs are. So I'm really grateful to be able to meet everybody today. All right, please be aware of your outside noise. The things that are going on around you. I know a lot of you get on the call and still have family things that you need to attend to, so be sure to mute yourself.
Well, and there is a way to mute everyone but the host, so you can do that too.
I can do that too, yeah. We'll see how it goes, because I do want to be able to answer questions. Let's go ahead and get started. Okay, so I want to do a quote from Einstein. The important thing is not to stop questioning. Insanity is doing the same thing over again and expecting to get different results. There are times when, as a mentor, I feel like, I'm going insane, nothing's working. And part of it is because I get into a routine and I keep doing that same thing over and over again, and it's not changing the results that I'm getting in my class. And so this fits with our drawing out. How do we draw out, and exactly what is it? So we're going to get into that, but I want to first set the stage here. I've spent time preparing for classes, and so this is going to be a class story. So here I am, frantically preparing for a lecture on Sir Isaac Newton, and I love this guy. Years ago, I read a children's classic on him, so I feel that that's going to help with my foundation because I've been busy during the week trying to do my family stuff, and yet I still need to be able to present on this amazing scientist. So I have a list of bulleted, pointed facts about him, things that I really want to make sure that I touch on. And I've done my research online, too, and I've read scientists who changed the world, and I've just got different areas that I've pulled information from to be able to do this. So I feel like I'm fairly clear on what I want to do, and I really want to talk about Newton's three laws. And so I don't have time to get everything together on that I want to do, but I know I'm going to do some experiments involving those, so I get that together as best that I can. And I'm so nervous because I might get some questions on those, and at the last minute I decide, okay, I've got some great videos. They're really short. They look like they're really comprehensive, and I'm going to use those in class too. So the last minute, the morning of class, I'm putting these videos on my computer because I think they're interesting and that the kids will like them. So I go to class. I have all this ready to go, and I'm really excited because I get to talk about Sir Isaac Newton. And The kids come in, they're engaged with each other, they're talking to each other. We get the room set up, we have to wait for the other classroom or class scholars to leave, and we get set up, and that takes some time. They finally get settled into their seats, and we start going through the routine of the class, follow the structured format, and then bam-o, it's time for lecture, and I'm ready to pour out my soul about Newton and share my enthusiasm with them. I get going. I start talking through my bulleted points, and then I get a little bit long-winded on a few things, and I start to realize that two of my kids are not mentally present. I know this because they are writing notes back and forth to each other on a notebook. In the back of my mind, I'm wondering if they're writing about me and maybe how boring my lecture is at that point. And then I start looking around. I'm continuing to give my information. Well,
conference muted.
And I noticed that three of them were kind of glossing over their eyes. They're either thinking about the things I'm saying, they're thinking about something else, or they're tired. And one of them does start yawning. And so I'm getting a little bit nervous as I'm still finishing up my lecture. I'm kind of getting fidgety with what I'm doing. And then I notice that two are starting to really think about the things I'm talking about, because now I'm getting into the three laws. And those two start engaging with me on the three laws and asking questions. And so I'm excited to share the videos. So I get the videos ready, I turn that on, and they're kind of all engaged at this point looking for to see what the video is. You know, and I have these cool videos there. They're about football, explaining the three laws, using that for the analogy. And it goes fairly well. They're all watching it. And as soon as we're done, I get hit with the train of what I didn't expect. I got that question that I couldn't answer. And so I'm feeling really vulnerable at this point in telling them that I didn't have enough information to answer their question. And then I had another one ask me if I could write all three laws on a board so she could write them down. And I didn't even think about getting a handout for them for that or having that ready for them. And so I know what the three laws are, but to actually put them into words instead of just talk about them on the board, the third law is kind of difficult to word. And so I was stressed at that point, but I had all the experiments set up. And so I said, okay, so what we'll do is I'll have you guys go do the experiments. I'll show you each one. And then while you're doing the experiments, I'm going to go to the board and write down the law. So, you know, I have a smartphone. I can do that. So I get them going on their experiments. I show each one, and I turn them loose. And I go to the board, and I'm frantically searching through my smartphone to find something of the third law that's worded so that it's really understandable, and I don't have to really put a lot of explanation into it. They've got a little bit of an idea, and I just can't find the right one. And so I get the first two laws up there, and I realize we're running out of time because I'm going back and forth now from the experiments to the board because they have questions about what they're doing, and I want to see what they're doing, and I want to be part of that. And so the third law doesn't ever meet the board. And we run out of time, and it's time for them to go. So I have all of these emotions afterwards, and we say our goodbyes, and I'm overwhelmed with, now I got to clean up all of the experiments because they have to go. And so I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm feeling unprepared and disappointed with myself, thinking about the kids that were not engaged and wondering, you know, just how boring was that for them? So now what? What do I do? Well, I have my co-mentor there. I have my student mentor there. And so we have a little debrief, and it's fairly short. We talk about, you know, the different things that happened. And, you know, sometimes my co-mentor can't be there, and so I have to figure some things out on my own, especially if my student mentor is unavailable too. So then I really need to do my writing and my processing through my emotions so that I can really focus on what really happened in class. And so the best thing for me to do is to process those emotions, get them out of my way so I can focus on the big picture. So I can ask that question of, was I effectively drawing out or was I pouring in? And what does that really mean? What does it mean to effectively draw out? As I was studying this and thinking about this, I came up with a few things. I feel like drawing out is being able to engage with them, connect with them, and having those moments so that I can actually share what needs to be shared. And in order to do that, I have to be observing and listening. And as I'm observing what is going on and listening, then I can find ways to inspire trust. If I can inspire trust, then I can really draw out of them what's going on inside, help them figure out and understand. And when I'm pouring in, if that's what I'm doing, which there's a time where I've got to do that sharing, I don't want to choke them on too much information. I don't want to be that overwhelming fire hose in that moment and drown them in the information, because if the point gets lost in the information, then we're missing the purpose of why we're mentoring. So this is what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the big picture and what's really going on in the class, how to observe and how to prepare to engage and connect with them. So what is it that I need to observe? What are some things that I need to be paying attention to? Well, there are three really, really important things. And the first that is core needs. What are the core needs, and what are those? What needs need to be met in my classroom? And what needs will help effectively draw out? Okay, so that's the first thing. The second thing is the environment. What do I see that's going on in the environment, and how does it affect those needs? Doing those first two things is going to help me to prepare, to engage with them and draw out. And then I can share the knowledge with them. So we're going to go over that first one, core needs. What are they? When I think about core needs, I'm thinking about the whole person. I need to be thinking about their body, their mind, their heart, and their spirit. So what are some body physical core needs? Okay, I'm going to open this up for a bit of discussion. I'm going to unmute you.
They need to eat and sleep.
They need to eat and sleep. Yes. They do need to eat and sleep. What else?
Exercise. Move. Wiggle.
They do. They need some movement. They get fidgety.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about physically in the classroom, sometimes the closeness of the other people interact, you know,
oh.
they are distracted by them or, you know, whatever.
Uh-huh. So are they sitting too close together?
Yes, or next to someone that distracts or, you know, causing disruption to others because of the noise level in the classroom. That's all very physical.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And sometimes you've got a kid that needs the physical contact. That's part of his love language, and he needs some ruffling up, you know. He needs the high five when he walks in, you know. And knowing which one of those kids needs that, that's really important too.
Right, and some are kinesthetic learners, so they need a physical engagement to just really engage.
Right, right. So doing something physical to get their attention, but not all of them are that way, but some of them are. And making a note and paying attention to who's got that need is super important. Another thing that I didn't think about until I reviewed some memories on this, we were teaching in the classroom one year that was just so hot. It's really hot down in southern Utah, and the air conditioner was not working well in the room that we were in. And my kids could not focus because it was too hot. We had to go outside and find some trees even, and still that was really warm. And so we had to bring fans in, and then they were loud. Those fans took up a lot of noise room. And, yeah, it was a hard year because of the physical situation of the class. And then I've been in situations where our class has been too cold. We get there in the morning and the whole building's ice, and so we brought in hot chocolate for them and those kinds of things to help them warm up so they could focus. So if they're so focused on their physical part of their body, it can be distracting from what you're trying to help them do.
Some people are so highly distracted by the noise. They're sensitive to sound and things. That just noise around them just makes them so they can't learn.
Right. So you may bring in some music to get them all excited about something, and all of a sudden you've totally lost one of them or two of them. And then thinking about whether the door's open or closed while you're trying to lecture or while they're trying to focus. We had a math final that we were doing just before the end of the semester, and I didn't even notice the noise that was going on in the hall because I'm really good at zoning my outside things around me. And one of the kids was like, I can't take it anymore. And they got up and they shut the door. And it didn't even dawn on me that it needed to be closed until they did it. And, yeah, so noise is a big factor. The other interesting thing that is a big physical factor is smell. If something doesn't smell good in your classroom, it is a focus and it becomes a distraction. We had one year where one kid was getting sick and having to go out of our classroom every 20 minutes. And we realized that there was something in the room that he was allergic to. We never figured it out. We could not figure out what he was allergic to. And so when the weather was finally good enough for us, we were able to move outside and he was able to be in class the whole time. But for the winter portion, he just couldn't really be with us because it made him sick to be in the room. So observing those things. So here's some questions for you. I'm going to go ahead and mute the line again. Okay.
Conference muted.
Okay. So here's some questions to think about. You're going to think about the physical senses: touch, hearing, vision, smell, and taste. So how is the room set up? Is it warm or cold? How are the chairs arranged? How about the tables? That's a really big one. I didn't realize it till this year. We have a girl who came in new to our class. She was new to the whole homeschooling concept. And we had our class set up with the chairs all arranged in a horseshoe, no tables. And we wanted to be really close with them. And so they were actually taking notes on their lap. And I didn't even think about that either. But about 3 classes into it, she decided she didn't want to come anymore. And so I had a one-on-one talk with her to find out, you know, what's the problem? And I didn't get very far with her. And so my other mentor, my co-mentor in the class, she was able to talk with her and find out that, and it also went through her parents too. There were a couple of phone calls made. It wasn't just the one meeting, but we were able to find out that she was uncomfortable with her body size, and she didn't want she to be in the open, and she felt like everybody was looking at her. And so her physical issue became an emotional issue for her. And so we put some tables in front of, made the horseshoe around some tables, and she started coming, and she kept coming. And so that was really interesting to me, that it's the physical needs become emotional needs. And it made me also think about when we were testing, you know, I gave them the option during testing time to sit wherever they wanted. They didn't have to sit at the table if they didn't want to. If they wanted to go on the floor or go in the corner, wherever else they wanted to do their testing at, they could do that. And I was thinking about the movie, what's it called, Men in Black. And there's a part where Will Smith is testing to be one of the Men in Black. And he's in an egg-shaped chair. They have these egg-shaped chairs in the testing room. And then they have this one coffee table in there that's this really heavy, too short to really meet the needs of the chairs that are in there. And as he's trying to figure out how to sit in his chair and do his test, and you're watching everybody in that room do that, you realize that the test really isn't what's going on the paper, but it's what's going on in the room and how they take advantage of their situation. And so changing things up is really, really important. Let's see, what else? Vision. Vision is a really important thing. How's the lighting in the room? Can you open the curtains? Are there windows? Are there too many windows? Are you standing in front of a window while you're lecturing, and are they seeing what's going on outside and not really even paying attention to what's going on in the class? On your videos, are they short and concise, or are they too long? Are they taking up too much time? Can they all see? Are you using pictures and posters and things that are brightly colored to get their attention? Let's see, what else? Do you need to go outside? Do you need to do a field trip? Is the room big enough? We had 1 year where we lost our building, and we had to move to a smaller building, and it was a very short notice type of thing. And we got these really, really teeny classrooms, and it was really hard because it was a dance studio, and we couldn't put tables on the floor in certain areas because of how the dance studio was constructed. They didn't want our tables and chairs there, and so we were confined to a small area in a small room, and that was really hard to work through. Sometimes the room is so big that when you're talking, you may not be projecting enough for them to hear what it is that you're saying, or they might be missing something because they're listening to something else. And then while we're lecturing or while we're presenting, are we moving around while we're doing it? Are we just standing in one place reading from our paper? Are we sitting while we're presenting? Are we needing to be on their level during discussion time? Do we sit down during that time? And what is our body language? Am I standing with my arms crossed and folded because I've had a tough morning? Am I smiling? Am I happy to be there? So am I showing that with my body language? And what is their body language? How are they receiving it? You know, watching for them, those yawns, that glassed over eye look of, I'm really not here. paying attention to those physical needs. So when those things are present, part of the solutions that I look for affect those questions. And a simple changing of how you sit in the room or how you stand or where you're standing at in the room to present can really help with some of these issues. Okay, so that's one core need. Now we're going to move on from physical core need to mental core needs. And what are mental core needs? Mental is to think, the need to express thought, to have a vision of themselves and what they are doing, to really understand what is going on in class. What are some other mental core needs that you can think of? I want to unmute.
Okay, Misty, I'm
what are some
testing myself. What was the first thing you mentioned?
What are some mental core needs? So
they need to be able to focus, be able to pay attention, if they're maybe, and have it not be feel like it's too hard for them, like if it's too difficult, they can't follow, you know, if there's information being thrown at them. Mentally, they can handle it all.
Okay, so we need to be clear, and they need to, we need to have good flow with what's going on in the class. That helps. Anything else?
Another thing I think is that they would need to feel secure or safe to be able to share their thoughts and not worry that they're going to look dumb or something like that.
Right. So that's going to go down to emotional core need, and that really plays a high role with the mental portion of this too.
In mental, that might include their learning style. You know, different people have different learning styles, and so
okay.
We using the different kinds. You know, there's auditory and there's visual and all those kinds. So, are they able to process it in a way that they can really learn well?
Okay. Yeah, that's really important too. If you have children or things that you're doing while we're doing the call, if you could go ahead and mute yourself by pressing *4, that would really help us out so that we could hear. Thank you. Okay, so yeah, I think that's really important, what was just said. It's been really, really helpful. Anything else that you can think of for mental?
I think that when I'm teaching, if I was better at making my points really clear, like sometimes I'll just kind of ramble to try to communicate what I'm thinking, instead of using more of a clear outline form, A1, 2, 3, so that they're going to get the main thing of what I'm trying to say. Sometimes when I ramble, I think they're not going to, it's just going to kind of flow over them, and they're not going to get the main point. Instead of maybe I can illustrate my point with, you know, either with something visual or, you know, auditory, make it really obvious. This is 1, 2, 3, and then repeat it, or, you know, things like that, so that it stands out and they can grasp it.
Right. Not losing the point in the information, you know, seeing the tree for the forest. I have the same problem. I've done that and gone, oh, yeah, this was what I was talking about. Darn it, we missed it.
And I suppose reviewing, you know, at the end, reviewing what we talked about so that, you know, we didn't, so that it's just, okay, this is what I said, remember, and then ask them, how did that go? At what point was it? You know, and just check on to see if they got it.
That's a really good idea, making sure that we recover and summarize or go back to that and see where they're at with it. Yeah, that's really good. Sometimes when I'm engaged with them and we're having a discussion and I'm trying to figure out if they got it, asking that right question to figure that out without having it be a right or wrong answer is really helpful. When I'm trying to figure out my questions to ask, I want to make sure I have them written down, because a lot of times when I'm looking for understanding, I'm just going to, in my own habit, just ask a right or wrong question. And I realize that really doesn't tell me if they've got it. It's just kind of like asking a training question. Did you catch that answer during my lecture? Not really seeing if they care about it, if it's important to them, if they've really internalized it. So asking the right questions is a challenge for us, and it's important that we're working on that as mentors. So I have my list here. Go through and share some questions we can ask to figure out about the mental core needs. So like we were talking about expectations and understandings, are they clear on what the topic is? What is the vision of the project? Are they clear about what it is we're doing in this project? Do they have a clear understanding of the goals and the whole point of the class, the point of the lecture, the point of the book we just read? And are there multiple points? There could be more than just one. Do they understand the commitments that they're making? And do they understand what commitment means? And do they know what a practice scholar is, what an apprentice scholar is? Do they have a shared vision? And what is their focus? If they're not focused on the point of the class, what is their focus? Sometimes I just get frustrated that they were totally not focused, but I didn't ask, you know, how are you doing today? How are things going at home? How are your friends doing? You know, taking that one-to-one time to really connect with them personally will help me understand their focus. And then what is focus?
Conference muted.
What is my focus as a mentor? Is it on my abilities as a mentor during the lecture, or am I really being present in the lecture? Are they meeting their goals in class? Why or why not? Am I meeting my goals? Have I read the mentor's handbook lately? Have I gone through those skills? Have I reviewed Student Whisperer, and am I applying those skills? Am I honoring and validating, relating, reflectively listening? And again, am I asking the right questions? Are they sharing their thoughts, or are they just giving a textbook answer? Because that's how I've questioned them. And is there a roadblock? Do we know what it is? Can we see what that roadblock is? Do we maybe have some knowledge or information for them to help them out with that roadblock? Are they not answering because they're worried about being right or wrong? So some things to help with mental core needs are taking a good look at how class went and how how connected they were, and taking the time to be with them in a one-to-one situation, catching them in the hall and saying, hey, what did you think of the questions we asked today? Or during experiment time or activity time, taking them aside and talking with them one-on-one. And it can be a really short thing. You know, I noticed that you're having a hard time today. What's going on? Or how can I help you? Those kinds of things help. Okay, so we're going to move to emotional core needs. And emotional is kind of fun because it's connected to everything. There is an emotion attached to all of our physical needs. There's emotions attached to all of our mental needs. It's hard to separate those emotional needs because they're attached to everything we do. So, what are some emotional core needs?
They need to feel loved and accepted.
You do. They need to feel loved. And they need to be able to express it. What else? What are some others?
Friends. They need friends. They need to feel like they're not alone.
They need to feel like they belong. They need friends. They need connectors.
I think when they put themselves out there and they're standing up and giving their presentations or they're answering questions, they need to feel not judged. We talked about this in the last core need, but just safe. They need to feel safe.
Safety.
Be honest.
Yeah, safety is really, really important, feeling comfortable with the people that you're with. So safety, belonging, love, is there anything else emotionally?
Well, you know, we have to remember these teenagers are, they're hormone machines. they're right in the middle of all of that transition in puberty, and they're just emotional roller coasters. So, you know, they're going to have lots of emotions that may or may not be related to what we're doing. And so we
right.
have to remember that and give them space.
And sometimes that's hard to remember. Sometimes we get so stuck on our own emotions that we're missing theirs.
And they may or may not be expressing them in a way that we can see. Some people are way out
okay.
there. Others just hide it all. So.
Yeah, I didn't hear you that last little bit because I can hear what's going on in the background. What was it that you just said?
Well, some people express themselves very obviously. They wear their emotions on their sleeves, but others hide it. And you won't know real obviously, so you have to kind of – it's, again, the being connected with, you know, one-on-one and, I don't know, feeling like you can kind of touch base with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. They have to feel safe enough to let you know how they're feeling.
Right, right. That's really, really important. Last night we had our pyramid party, and we did a simulation, and then we watched a movie, and then we did our simulation, our debrief of the simulation. Then we did our movie and our debrief of the movie. And the movie, for my observation of what happened, the movie, they didn't take a lot of it seriously, and the girls were talking through the movie and laughing at the seriousness of it, And the boys were like, be quiet, because they really, it was intense, and they wanted to have that emotional experience of the intense feeling because, you know, they're boys. They like that. And the girls just thought some of it was cheesy, and so they were kind of changing the atmosphere that the boys wanted. And so afterwards, when we're debriefing, we talked a little bit about that. And so some of their shares were interesting. And I noticed when I asked the serious questions, two of the girls would really, really start laughing. And I realized that was part of them trying to understand how to feel in that moment without wanting to share too much. They it was easier for them to laugh at it than it was to go to that seriousness. And so I asked some silly questions, and I noticed that one of the boys was really, really hiding his laughter from me. He didn't want me to know that he thought that was funny, and he didn't want the girls to see him laughing about it. And it was just interesting to watch that play. And I thought that some of that had to be hormonally related, because I think there's a couple of kids that like each other too. It's funny because that's important, you know, what their friends think of them and how they feel about each other. Huge woman mentoring. Okay. All right. So I'm going to give you my list of questions to think about to help decide what the core needs are.
Conference
for,
muted.
For emotional. So do they feel safe to share their thoughts? And am I connecting emotionally with them? What is my relationship with them? Do I tell them how incredible I think they are? What do they love? What is their passion? What do they care about? What do I know about who they are? Have I asked them how they're feeling? Or not just how they're doing, but how they're feeling. Knowing, feeling, and doing, they're all three different things, and they're all in those different core needs. Have I seen the interplay between the kids in class? How are they treating each other? Are they getting on each other's nerves? You ever have that moment where you're holding your breath because you can see the emotions start to rise between the kids and you want them to work through it? Oh, it's hard to watch. We had one kid that got up and gave an awesome presentation about the eyes and how they're connected to the sinus cavity and what happens to the nose because of the eyes. And he was really excited about what he'd learned and discovered. And one of the kids in class started teasing him, and in the middle of his presentation, kind of being sarcastic with the questions. They weren't questions that they really thought that he could answer. And in that moment, I'm trying to decide, do I intervene? What do I say? And so what happened was this kid was so amazing. Let me tell you the question. The question was, well, then why in the world do we have snot? It's so gross, and I don't see why we need it. I mean, it's just in there, and it's gross, and what do you know about snot? And he said, oh, that's really cool because I studied that. I had that same question too. And so this is what I found out. It has to do with when our eyes water and things that are coming into our eyes, and the nose has this area where it receives that moisture. And if it has too much moisture, then it forms into this. And he started explaining how all of that functioned together and how he thought it was really interesting, even though it was gross. And she was surprised. You could see by the look on her face that she did not expect him to be able to answer that question. And she was actually really irritated with the topic. And so his brother's in the class too, and he's watching her response and could tell that she was teasing in the questioning, and he was irritated with her over how she jumped into the presentation to voice that. And it dawned on me that she's my one that came from public school. I didn't sit down and have a conversation with her on presentation. All these other kids have been in our Commonwealth for at least 2 years of either Shakespeare or Key of Liberty, and they've been doing these presentations and have kind of an understanding of the etiquette, and I never laid down any boundaries. And so I realized, oh, we need to have this conversation. And the one presenting, he did such a good job. He honored her question. He validated and connected with her, and then he shared what he learned. And it was this really incredible demonstration of his skills to be able to present and connect. And he didn't realize that's what he was doing, but it was great to watch. And I'm really glad that I didn't intervene in that moment so that we could all have that experience. So something else with emotional. Thinking about my own emotions, am I projecting my emotions on the class? Is what's going on inside of me about how my confidence or my lack of confidence is, how is that affecting the kids? And do they uplift each other? Do they inspire each other? Do they respect and honor each other? And if there's sarcasm going on, what is really underneath that sarcasm? What is really, really happening? Okay, so some of those things are really important. As a mentor, when you have to figure out those core needs and you have to decide what you're going to do, there are some different ways to mentor to help with that. There's styles of mentoring. And one really important style is coaching. Coaching is so effective when you're mentoring, being very passionate with them and supportive of them and being that coach / cheerleader, letting them know that they can do the project, that they can do these things, and helping them to figure out how they feel about it is really important. Doing simulations. Simulations are a core key ingredient in mentoring to bring those emotions up, to help them connect with who they want to become, with the possibility of what their purpose, their mission might be. It's essential for them. And when we do those things, the most important thing afterwards is the debrief. Talking about their feelings. If we skip the debrief, we are not allowing those feelings to go expressed. It's so important. When it's even part of bringing in that kind of discussion into our book readings. I have them read books sometimes that I don't like because of the story. Maybe I don't like the story. Maybe they're not going to like that story. But I want them to read that book anyways because it brings out a specific point. And so we talk about why they didn't like it. We talk about why it was a hard book to read, why we wanted to put it down. We talk about the characters that we thought were terrible. You know, we talk about those emotions. And if we need to, and things are happening that are really hard in class, we need to communicate with the parents and find out, you know, what we can do to help. If things are not going well and emotions are really, really high, we may need some parents in there to help with some things. And that's okay. It's okay to take the time to figure out what you need to do. Okay, so The next area of core need is the spiritual portion of core need. Now, the spiritual is sometimes really hard to talk about because it's part of what controls the other three, part of what moves those other three cores. It's the compass for the physical body. It's the moral compass for the mind, the body, and the emotional feelings. So how do we figure that out? How do we figure out what's going on spiritually in class? I'm going to unmute the line. What do we need to know about spiritual core needs?
It seems like this is a really hard question. It varies with the topic that we're discussing, it seems.
It does, because it affects all the others, right?
I mean, it seems like we're looking for maybe true. We're looking for truth in everything we're doing, finding the truths, and that really kind of relates to their faith and their beliefs in what is their core book, and is that really, can they really go to that for their truth, you know? And then do they really believe that they can measure things against that core book? Would you?
Yeah.
Shall I?
Okay, so what I'm going to do, because there is a lot of background noise, is I'm going to go ahead and mute the line and ask you guys to raise your hand.
Conference muted.
And then I'll unmute you individually. Okay, so some of that I was able to hear, and some of that I wasn't. Core book. I know she brought up core book and understanding what their beliefs are and if they can really measure the truth that we're teaching against that or with that. Okay, what else? I'm looking for hands. We're talking about the spiritual core needs. I think it's star 5 that raises your hand. Okay. I'm going to unmute Joy. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I've been talking enough, so I wasn't going to, but on the line this morning. Okay, so I'm thinking another important part of it would be them knowing they're a child of God and believing that. That would be, you know, a spiritual, it would affect them in all other aspects. So that would be kind of a core spiritual thing, you know, them believing that they're a child of God, and that, you know, can help them. It affects all of their outlook on everything. And then from there, you know, them gaining a testimony of the truthfulness of their core book and believing that they can have a place to go, they can have trust and faith and confidence. That, you know, that they have truth that they can guide their lives by in their decisions. Am I getting it?
That is, yes. Oh my goodness, yes. Yeah. Having that testimony of their core book is really, really important. And you can see it expressed in some of them, and some of them are really, really careful not to express it.
And maybe they don't feel safe, you know, or maybe they feel they might be criticized or questioned, you know, if their beliefs are different. you know, we're not strong. Maybe they don't feel as strong and confident, and so they don't want to say anything because they don't want to be, you know, judged or something.
Okay. So we may have some in there that don't know if they believe in their core book, or maybe they don't know if they believe the same things that everybody else around them believes.
Right, and they are not confident necessarily in finding out. They don't want to be different because teen, you know, youth have a scare, are scared to be different.
They are scared to be different. Let's see. How do their morals play a role in that spirituality? Is there a basis for everyone having the same standards?
Well, I remember hearing a talk, I don't know, a homeschool talk, about how the basic moral code is consistent across the world religions, you know, right and wrong, good and bad, you know, some of the basic 10, I don't know, top moral code is across all of religions have it, you know. And so I think that there is, you could say that there's some pretty basic rights and wrongs and truths and falses that you know, go across, they're ingrained in us. You know, it isn't just which book is your core book, but it's because, you know, because they're true. And we feel it. Our spirits feel it. They know it.
Right. So even if we've got a kid in there that is struggling spiritually or has a different spiritual belief, in that maybe they are not sure if there is a God, we've had this experience where we've had youth in our group that struggled with the idea of that, and she is where she's at, and it's okay with us for her to be in that area because that's where she's at. Somebody that's on her list to study is C.S. Lewis, and she will generally go to the morals and values that he has taught and based her beliefs off of those truths that she has learned from him. And it's at one point we had a lot of some who were panicked over this idea, and most of us were able to go, now wait a minute, she has a different belief going on right now than the rest of the group, and that doesn't change how she's behaving. Her behavior reflects a good moral compass, and we love her for that. We love her to be able to express to us where she's at, and she felt safe enough to be able to share those things with us about how she was spiritually feeling and what she thought. And I think sometimes we get closed off in our happy bubble, and we don't want to see the things that they're spiritually questioning because it might be scary to us as parents, it might be scary to us as mentors, but it's so important that they are able to talk about it and connect with us.
Vital, and it's so awesome that she felt respected enough. You know, that's one of the most important things is for them to feel, to everyone to respect everyone else's beliefs. And when they feel respected, then they can respect ours. You know, when we respect theirs, they can respect ours, and we can have a mutual, you know, appreciation and acceptance of each other. And then once people feel accepted, that their beliefs are accepted, they feel much safer in asking questions instead of feeling like they're having to defend them, you know, stay in a defensive stance. they can then feel safe to question. If they're feeling defensive, then they can't feel safe. They're not safe to venture forth and ask questions and feel open to that because they feel like they have to defend themselves all the time.
Yes, and then the whole point of the class gets lost in the defense. The whole point of what we're trying to do gets lost because of that feeling that comes over that core need. Thank you so much for sharing and talking with me about this. So I have another list for you. I'm going to send my list of questions out. It's going to be emailed out so that you can have questions to look through to help you decide what is really going on in your class. So for each section, I'll be sending those out. So here are some spiritual core needs questions. So what is the feeling of the whole atmosphere in my class? Is it tense? Is it relaxed? Is it unfocused? Is it an unorganized feeling? Is it uncomfortable? Or does it flow? And what does that flow and rhythm feel like? Is there freedom of expression? Are there boundaries that need to be set because moral issues are questionable? Do I have an upset kid in there that is inflicting and bullying? What are the moral issues that are going on in class? What do I need to really be aware of? Do I need to change a project lecture to a moral lecture? Do we need to set some boundaries and explain a moral to them? Does it need to be a simulation? Do we need to have an experience to relate to understand the moral concept? And what is it that they need to experience? What kind of debriefs are we having? What are the debrief questions we need to be asking? What does their body language tell you when they first walk in? What systems or class structures do I need to change to meet their needs for a purposeful and meaningful experience? Am I using classics to mentor from, such as quotes and books and documents and core books? Am I using simulations and short lectures with debriefs? Do I need to bring in something to help them function better? Am I bringing morals and God into my lecture? Am I lecturing when I should be discussing or doing a simulation? Okay. I'm going to open up for questions. And for the next few minutes on those questions, I said if there's anything that you have question on. Oh, and I have just a couple more, just a minute. I realized I skipped over a little section here. So what is the no, feel, and do for this week? Am I hearing them with my spiritual ears? Am I listening to respond verbally or to fix a problem when I need to be listening for truth of what is really happening? Am I seeing them with my spiritual eyes? If my eyes, or if they are at 100% in every core need, how incredible would they be? And am I treating them according to that potential instead of their behavior? Okay. Does anybody have any questions?
I have way tons of questions, but I don't want to be bold. I've been kind of monopolizing the whole call, so I'll just hold tight, and then if everybody else doesn't have questions, then I'll ask.
Okay.
Okay. Is it okay to ask now?
I think that probably somebody's going to have a question that you asked, so go right for it.
Okay. Okay. So, first of all, am I the only one that feels totally overwhelmed by not, I feel like I really want to be a good mentor, learning about all these wonderful things to do to be a mentor, and I just...
Hey, Joy. Joy.
Yes.
Joy, whatever's going on in the background is louder than you.
Okay, so I don't know who's that is. It's not my house.
Okay, let me do a mute on all of them, and then I'll unmute you. Okay?
Conference muted.
Okay, there you are.
Okay. All right, so, you know, I've been hearing all these wonderful, reading all these wonderful things, hearing all these wonderful things about all the great things to do to be a mentor and to be a good mentor, and I feel like I just want to do all those things and be all those things, but I can't remember them all, and I'm not naturally good at all of them, and I just get overwhelmed because I forget to do the debrief, or I, you know, forget to, you know, touch base with one-on-one. I mean, you know, all these things. I just think, I can't be all that. So it's really so overwhelming when I'm, you know, and I'm mentoring by myself, and we're in a new area, and nobody knows anything about this, and so I'm new, and I haven't been able to watch master mentors in progress. And so I'm just like, oh, this sounds great, and I've experienced it at a very small degree in training, you
mm-hmm.
know, but it's like I'm the one in class, really. I'm the one trying to learn all this, and they're just guinea pigs while I'm trying to learn how to be a mentor.
Ah. Well, I would bet you that all of us have that feeling of, oh, my goodness, now what? What am I doing? Oh. Yeah, and getting ready to figure out how to do that. But then we also have our families to balance. We have to be moms. Some of us have to work and still have time to prepare, and then we're so worried about getting prepared with the knowledge portion to be able to share information with them. And it's hard to not get the whole point of the project lost in being able to give them that information too.
And I do try to remind myself that even if I just do a little bit of, you know, if I get a little bit of the knowledge stuff and we're doing a little bit of the mentoring, it's better than nothing. So I'm trying to, you know, say I'm doing better than I would be if I wasn't doing anything. And so that's all I can, you know, I can only do as well as I can, and I can keep trying to do better.
Right.
I'm excited to send you those questions. Too.
Yeah, and when I go through these questions, when I send them out, I don't want you to think that, oh, I didn't ask this question, or oh, I didn't do this one thing this week, or oh my goodness, I'm such a failure because I can't remember all of these things. That's not why I'm sending them out. If you can just be thinking about, oh, I wonder what the feeling is today, and I'm going to really watch for that one thing. Then you are changing your observation. Something important that really happens that I love is that once we start changing our awareness of one thing, sometimes that's the one key to creating the environment that they need to really be inspired. Sometimes it is just one thing. It doesn't need to be as complicated as we try to make it.
Right. So I suppose, just like, you know, Benjamin Franklin took one attribute each month or whatever, I suppose if we just focus on one thing and, you know, work on that and follow the spirit on what that one thing needs to be that day, then that's enough, right?
Yes. It really, really is. It is enough. And even in these conference calls when we're giving all of this information and feel like we've got to share this, I'm still not getting everything in that I want to share with you guys today. If you take one thing away from this, it's the changing your awareness of what is going on in the environment. What is happening? What is really, really happening? Our mentor reports are designed specifically to help us personally. If we don't do the mentor reports, it's not affecting me as a Lemmy trainer that you're not doing your report. It's affecting you as a mentor because that report helps you to figure these things out and to pick the one thing you want to do different the next week to find that one answer that needs to happen. To look at it and go, oh, maybe this lecture needs to be a simulation instead. Or maybe I just need to have this discussion with this one kid by themselves and it'll only take 5 minutes to really see what's going on. It's that one thing that helps affect everything. I'm really, really glad you said that, Joy.
Okay. So I have some other questions, but they're more, I don't know, hands-on questions about pyramid specifically, but I think they relate to any of them, actually. I feel, okay, as a new mentor, I feel not very good at simulations, coming up with my own and how to do that and what even, like here, I'm looking at the second semester philosophy part of pyramid going, I'm supposed to, first of all, decide which books I want to read and if I want to read these particular ones or change. And then I'm supposed to come up with and simulations and all this stuff on my own. And I know that we're supposed to be the apprentice mentors as well as them be the apprentice scholars. We're supposed to be doing this more on our own instead of just being handed everything. But I'm like, I feel totally clueless. Like, what do I do? I don't know. And so
when you,
I don't know. There's some
I'll give you. No, I'll give you a really quick rundown on simulations. The three key ingredients and then the fourth most important part. So you want to think about the know, the feel, and the do. What do you want them to know? What do you want them to feel? And what do you want them to do? And then you come up with the story.
That sounds great, but it still sounds very abstract and fuzzy to me. Ah.
That's okay. That's okay.
I mean, I think, okay, so in training we had a simulation about, I don't know, we were on a spaceship or something. I was trained in Virginia, so I don't know what you guys did in your trainings. But, and, you know, okay, so we went through this whole thing, and then we were supposed to, like, learn from it or whatever. But I'm like, how am I supposed to come up with that? You know, that was just, you know, is there like a book of simulations that I look through and say, oh, that's what the one I want? I feel like, I'm supposed to pick this stuff out of thin air, you know, just make something up? I don't know. That just seems really hard for me. Maybe it's just
it does. It takes some time. It takes some time to create a simulation, and you will make mistakes, and it will be okay. It will totally be okay as long as you do that. The fourth thing, let me tell you what the fourth thing is. It's that debrief. You got to talk about how it went.
And I have to remember to debrief. Oh,
you have to leave time for it. It's one of the most important parts because there's no point in doing a simulation if you don't talk about what happened.
Right.
You have to decide what is it that you want to happen. You have to decide what is the purpose, and then you have to find the story that will fit that purpose. You have to figure that story out. And it could go along with your books. Let me give you a for example. We are reading a book called Sophie's World, and the simulation we're going to do around it doesn't have a lot to do with the book, but it has to do with some of the skills that were going on and expressed in the book. So the simulation's going to be a crime scene. It's going to be a mystery, and they're going to have to solve the who did it. Sophie's World is about a young lady who is getting mentored by this mysterious man that she doesn't know a lot about. And in some parts of it, it's creepy, but he's mentoring her in philosophy. And the questions that come out of their mentoring are pretty incredible and important questions for our kids to think about. And so I really wanted them to figure that out. But then I also have another aspect of the story that's going on is that this young lady is working with a stranger. And so I kind of want to get them thinking about that whole background story that's happening too. And so part of my simulation has to do with a mystery, the right and wrong moral of, is that really okay? And a crime that happened, something that they can start picking up clues on to try to solve. And so I don't know exactly what my simulation is yet, but I'm starting to form it in my mind. I want them to have to solve something because it's philosophical. I want them to have clues to figure it out because throughout the whole book, it's a mystery as to who this man is and where he came from and why he's there. And then I also want them to understand this moral thing of, should I really be making these connections with these strangers and not telling my parents what's going on? Because there's a portion of this book where she's not sharing that information with her mom.
Oh, my goodness.
But her mom is represented in the book as asking those moral questions and stating that, I don't like you talking to him. I haven't met him. We need to see who he is. We need to understand where he comes from. So it's brought up in an important light, and I want them to have that feeling too. So I know what I want them to feel. I'm not sure what I want them to do, but I'm starting to figure out kind of what I want them to do and kind of what I want them to get out of it. So it's a progressive creation. So
wow.
My process is asking those questions. What do I want them to know? What do I want them to feel? What do I want them to do? And what's the background story for the simulation? So we could do a whole conference call on that. That's a really good idea. We should probably
do a conference call
on how do we do a simulation? How do we create that?
Oh, man.
I'm writing that down
fabulous.
In my notes. Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Does anybody else have questions about anything that we've covered today?
I do. Another question is, you know how the philosophy is, it used to be a philosophy originally, and then it changed to Georgics. And it was Georgic for a long time, and now Georgics is on his own. And I sent a note out to the group asking if there's anybody who's done it before, and one person responded that they had done it once, and I'm hoping to connect with her. But I feel like I would really like to talk to someone who's done the philosophy before, and there's nobody.
Joy, you and I can talk about it because I've done it for several years. I did it before I became a trainer. So
okay.
You and I can talk about it later.
Okay.
In fact, if you want to stay on afterwards, we can set a time up for that, okay?
Perfect.
Okay. Okay, so to help with the overwhelming feeling that you may be having, there are 7, 8 things that I do to prepare. And I won't be able to go into detail with with all of these things, but I do want to tell you what they are to help me prepare.
Okay.
So the first thing I do is I create my own environment to study in as a mom, as a mentor. I have to have my study time to prepare for class. And it might be a really short time, but just having a little bit of quiet time to center myself to be able to prepare for class. And in that moment, I do my own personal prayers and thinking time. And sometimes it's scattered through the week. You know, I'll think, okay, I've got to have a little bit of time here to focus on what it is I'm trying to prepare for the week. And then I keep my commitment to do some prep work. And sometimes that's late into the night or early in the morning. And when I do that, I try really hard to remember that I'll receive my answers as I go. I may not receive all of my answers in that prep time, in that short prep moment. Later on during the week while I'm doing the dishes or doing something, an answer might come to me. So I'm careful to keep something down that I can write on and keep with me. I have my own commonplace book, so I can keep track of those things that do come to me to take care of in class. And I adjust my plans for class to meet the scholar's needs. I might have spent 4 hours during the week preparing for a specific lecture or discussion or document study, and I come to class and I feel that that's not what we need to do. I feel like, oh gosh, we really need to talk about this other thing. And instead we do that instead of what I prepared, because that's what I felt needed to happen when I walked into class. So I'm comfortable adjusting my plan for what really needs to happen in class. And then I'm careful to teach from truth. I'm careful where I'm getting my information from. Resources are really important to me. And then I want to be sure that I'm bearing witness of those truths, that I'm not just saying, oh, well, this is true because I tell you it is. I want there to be that feeling in class that I give a witness of a truth when I share it.
Yeah.
And then I follow through with my own accountability. I'm accountable to my commitment, and I try to be sure that that's transparent and open for them to see, because I want them to be that way with me. So I work really hard to model how I want them to be.
Okay.
And so here's a quote for you from Gandhi. The difference between what we are doing and what we are capable of doing would solve most of the world's problems. This is on a mentor level and a scholarly level. We are capable of being mentors. We're capable of being that conduit to inspire them. And we can treat them according to their potential. We just have to see it. And when we see it and we treat them that way, they will open up so that we can draw out and inspire them to greatness. I know you guys can do this. I know that what we ask can be really, really hard, but I know that you can do it. Don't overstress yourself with trying to be perfect. Make your mistakes. It's okay. Get through your emotions so that you can see the big picture. And then start asking questions. I'm going to unmute the line. see. Anything else that anybody wants to share or say before we go?
Okay, sounds like there's not. Thank you so much, Misty, for all of your wonderful advice and lesson that we've been able to listen to and your inspiration. And good. It's been really nice to hear from you. And thank you, Joy, for your questions. I think you did voice questions that other people have had and just weren't talking as much.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm staying on to talk to Misty at the end.
Thank you, everyone on the call, and thank you, Misty, so much for, again, for being on the call and helping us out.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Okay, we'll see you later.
Bye-bye.